GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So let's get into the weekend's hurling. We have Jamesy O'Connor on the line. Shane Stapleton is here in the studio. And it was another weekend where the hurling was brilliant. So on Saturday evening, we had a double header in the Sunshine. Wexford beaten comprehensively by Galway by 9 points in the end. An early goal for Galway almost killed any sense of atmosphere there. And Galway once again laid down a marker. And then that was followed by an absolute stomper between Cork and Limerick. A draw in the end, 125 to 28 points. Limerick snatching a draw right at the death and then blocking down a Cork effort on goal. And that was followed by, on Sunday, Dublin against Offaly. So Offaly won't be in the Leinster Championship next season. They'll be in John McDonagh. 224 to 13 points, the scoreline in Dunnecarney. And then another stunningly good game, and it also was a draw in Munster. Waterford 222, Tipperary 222. And on we march. So this Saturday, we have Galway against Dublin, and we have Kilkenny against Wexford to see who meets Galway in the Leinster final. And then Munster's wide open. Tipperary play Clare, and then Limerick host Waterford at the Gaelic Grounds. Jamesy, we should just make the point, there are football people, good, honest-to-God football people in the country who feel like it's the Hurling Championship and the Hurling Championship only at the moment. I know you two are the wrong two people to talk to about this, but we have great stories from Fermanagh to Carlow, and Mayo Galway was a pretty interesting game. I mean, I'm sure ye lads will be cribbing during the Super 8s, but football people are probably looking at the Sunday game every evening now saying, where the hell are we?
They're looking at the Sunday game, I hope, just enthralled by what they're seeing, because the fair on offer has been fantastic.
That's a typical hurling man answer to that.
Typical hurling response, but I mean, you know, the flip side of that is that, you know, listening to you know, you guys on radio talking about how dire Galway and Mayo was as I was heading down, I think, to, I don't know where I was going, I was coming back down from, I think, Parnell Park, actually, Dublin Kilkenny. And that was dire, and I think Monaghan Fermanagh wasn't much better the weekend either. So, I listen. Obviously, you know, from a punter's perspective, you know, if you're a hurling person, you know, this is, you know, you can't get enough of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the games have been absolutely fantastic in Munster. I mean, we said beforehand, Joe, that it was wide open, that anybody could beat anybody on any given day. But that's the reality of it. Yeah. And half the games have ended in draws in Munster, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the wheat has been separated from the chaff in the Football Championship, and, you know, I mean, I thought Clare would give a good account of themselves in the football on Sunday, and it was bitterly disappointing to see that result. Galway put Sligo to the sword, and, you know, I think, look, obviously the football will kick off, but certainly at the moment, I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, do you show, you know, two negative defensive football teams, or do you show, you know, Limerick and Cork going at it, hammer and tongs, or Tip and Cork going at it, you know, taking the gloves off and seeing who's still standing after 70 minutes. So
it's hard to argue with you.
It's just been great. I think it's exceeded all our expectations.
Yeah, the football games have been intriguing. That's the word we like to use about them. It was an intriguing game between Mayo and Galway. Shane, I know you're loving it. I mean, it is at the moment, like, and the weather is good. Like, there's so many little things, all these little things kind of combining. Like, even the weather has been really good. It's this kind of festival of hurling at the weekend. And I mean, I think this format will work regardless, but if ever there was a great time to trial it and get everybody on board with it, it is now in 2018, when in Munster in particular, the teams are so evenly matched, it's so open, and every game could go either way, give or take, and like, we're just getting these do or die last 10 minutes again and again and again. So I mean, I'd say it's even surpassed your pretty high expectations.
100%. I even get goosebumps thinking about the matches over the past few weeks. Like, you show up in the press box early, and let's say you bump into someone who's doing analysis for someone else, and they're all, you know, what do you think's going to happen today? And you're like, well, Tipperary, I mean, they have the better players, but they could lose by 10 points or they could win by 10 points. Who knows what's going to happen at the moment? And like, I was the press box in the Gaelic grounds for Limerick Tip. It's kind of way back where the press are, where the written press are. So I tend to go upstairs where the radio are, and I have WLR FM on one side of me and Tip FM on the other side, and they're both, you know, it's pandemonium for their team, and you're being drawn into that excitement as well. Leinster's actually been, I mean, the last couple of weeks it's kind of settled down a little bit, but the first day, Kilkenny against Dublin was incredible.
Brilliant.
And then
Kilkenny
going to Galway, even though Galway were always the better team. Like, there were great games and great occasions, and oh, it's a great time. The worry is just in a couple of weeks it feels like it's falling over a cliff edge and it's done.
So Munster is still wide open, effectively.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's nuts. I mean, you can't really, like we talked about it just beforehand, it's very hard to say who's where and, you know, who's doing what right and who's doing what wrong. I mean, you look at Tipperary and you think Tipperary in 2018 look a bit like Mayo in 2017. You know, they're shambling along, but all of a sudden they could take off, or someone could just finish them off. You just really don't know, and now they're reliant on other results.
Yeah.
I mean, Waterford, we had them all written off, and I think this is one of the few times in GA that a team was genuinely written off, and I think Dan Shanahan's poor mouthing on the show about all the injuries probably helped, but they came out and gave a rip-roaring performance. And you know, it's like,
it's almost like an angry Waterford performance in some way, and I think their first 10-11 efforts all went over the bar. It was an unbelievable start. So let's talk Waterford-Tipperary first then. It was an amazing game, and obviously not without its controversy. 222 to 222 in the end. James, on Shane's point that they're not sure in that parallel way to maybe Mayo last year, if Tipperary are ready to be destroyed and put out of their misery, or if they're potentially going to take off. There is a distinct feeling of papering over the cracks in many respects, but then they're not giving up either. They're a difficult team to read just now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's one school of thought that they're, you know, like a punch-drunk boxer on the ropes, and, you know, I'm certainly hoping that Clare can administer the last rites and land the knockout blow, throwing out all the cliches now, Joe, on Sunday. But, you know, I thought there were little signs, you know, Cathal Barris certainly gave them an injection, you know, of energy and pace when he came onto the pitch. Bonner made a difference. Brendan Maher had a super second half. And, you know, I just think the big issue for Tip is the quality of ball going into their inside forward line. You know, Callan got one really good ball in the first half and engineered a goal chance for Bubbles. And Stephen O'Keefe came out and just threw himself at it. I mean, it was a, you know, really brave save. I think he actually blocked it with his face. You know, but that was the only time really in the game that, you know, Tip really cut them open and carved them open. And
sorry to interrupt there, because that's a really interesting point. So you take the 2016 All-Ireland final, for instance, and the quality of ball that was going into Callan, and admittedly there was a lot of space left in that Kilkenny defence that day, but there was such thought behind the ball, and there was such intent, and it was a sympathetic pass, and everything that you want. Have they just gone now to almost hitting hope territory? Like, what in 2018 is the Tipperary version of ball going in, and isn't it quite an amazing thing that they would have gone backwards in that department when they had mastered it at one point?
Yeah, for me, and look at Shane's a tip man, I mean, that to me is the crux of it. I mean, it's like that they've forgotten everything that was good about 2016. I mean, you know, with Callan and Bubbles and McGrath, like, if you get quality ball bouncing in front of those guys, you know, with the telepathic understanding I think they have at times, I think they're very, very hard to play against. Now, one thing that I'm not so sure about, and it's just a different thing. Like, Jason Ford's form during the league was so good that that you had to start him. And again, he played well last Sunday. But, like, if he's full forward and Callan's in the corner, you know, are Tip a better team? I'm not sure that they are. And sometimes,
as in, you want Callan at full forward.
Sorry?
You want Callan at full forward?
I think Callan's still at full forward, even in terms of laying off the ball. I still think that, yeah, that's his best position, where he's centrally involved. I think he's just easier to kind of tie down in the corner. And I think himself, as an experienced player who's, you know, played for Tip for so long now, I think that would be his preference as well. And I still think with him at his best, if he can get his confidence back up, you know, Tip are a better side. Just one thing on Munster as well, Joe. I mean, talking to the brother of Christy this morning, and he said that somebody said this morning somewhere that there are still 81 possible permutations in Munster, you know, with two rounds of matches left, which is absolutely incredible. But that's it. Who knows?
And I would say there's smoke coming out of Christy's ears with the amount of statistics that have been generated over the last number of weeks. It's like complete overload, I'd say. There's too much to handle.
Yeah, and like, I've seen the recording method. It looks ingenious, but he just produces these nuggets of information.
I might put your points to Shane, and then you can pick up wherever else you want to go. So, James, you talked there about maybe the biggest difference being potentially the quality of ball going in, maybe a question mark over Callan as well. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing an issue with the ball going in, but I did think for the first half and for a little bit of the second half that there was an attempt to try and hit space with the ball.
Okay.
And Christy came up with that example of when Callan received the ball, did the over-the-head hand pass, and then Bubbles should have got a goal after John McGrath's pass. And that was one perfect example. And a couple of minutes later, Paddy Maher came out with a ball and he pinned it into the far flank for Jason Ford, who had a shot and hit it wide. So I did feel there was an attempt to do that. But eventually they resorted to the old thing of, let's put snow on the ball here. And it's very easy. Like, if you don't look at where you're hitting that ball and you hit it, turn a good ball into 50-50 possession, it's very easy for a team who, especially when they had a spare man, as Waterford did in the second half, to mop up the ball. And like, I've played in the sweeper position before, and when you're on top and the ball is coming down slow, it's the easiest position in the world. And as Mark Coleman found out for Cork, if the ball's been hit into the right areas, you can be as fast as you like, but if that ball is put in the corner where Seamus Flanagan or Graham Mulcahy wants it, it's very hard
to
get there.
Well, I always think, and the way the sweeper is talked about in hurling, I find it absolutely hilarious that the sweeper should be any kind of issue in hurling, because you should be able to beat the sweeper with a good ball with your eyes half closed. Mm. Like, in other sports, it's a bigger deal. Football, it's a much slower game and you have to be more accurate. But I mean, a hurling sweeper should be taken out of the game left, right and centre.
100% they should, because it's only in the position in the field that sweeper is standing that they have a numerical advantage. You know, in soccer, for example, the whole team moves forward and back together. In rugby, they all move back. But whereas even in Gaelic football, that's somewhat true. But in hurling, if you move the ball up the field, pass it through the hands, and then have the person who's delivering on the front foot, and it's not always that easy to do.
Yeah.
You can definitely take the sweeper.
I appreciate it comes into play if the sweepers forwards are putting the ball coming out under pressure, then it's maybe a bit more predictable. So, there's Tipperary. The other thing I want to ask you, Shane, about Tipperary was, you know, so the other area you'd be slightly concerned about them, and where it seems Michael Ryan is trying to figure out things, is in defence. We were just chatting before we came on air, and you were saying, well, Tipperary currently don't overly protect their defensive line, so you are thrown out a little bit to fight for yourself. Yeah. And we have Seamus Kennedy trying to do that at full back. It's a specialist position in hurling. You know, James Barry's not there anymore.
Yeah, he's on the bench. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's who knows what's going on there. But that's a big area of concern. If you're Michael Ryan and you're talking about the business end of this season potentially, then they're going to have to sort out something there.
Yeah. Well, like, again, and to use an analogy from another sport, Tipper playing too high a line. So their half back line, their midfield and their half forward line are getting shoved too far up the field, and that's allowing opposition teams to have a huge amount of space to hit the ball into. Mm. And if there's movement going on up front, which Tip don't do at the other end, by the way, or not enough of, then you're kind of very much left in the deep water. And like, as a cornerback, I suppose you earn your crust by being able to get out in front for those balls. Mm. But when the opposition team is able to pick exactly where to hit it, it's so difficult. Seamus Kennedy's done actually quite well. Like, at the start of the game, Tom Devine scored 1-2 and he was all over him. But late on in the game, when Tip really needed it, Kennedy started winning ball.
Okay.
I don't think he's the biggest issue. I think Sean O'Brien had an okay game, a couple of mistakes, but did pretty well. Michael Cahill had quite a tough time, and he's had a tough time all year. Now, he was actually starting to win his battle with Patrick Curran just before he was taken off. Mm. But I think it's pretty obvious that Cathal Barrett has to come in at cornerback the next day.
Okay. So Barrett in, and then it's not so much, say, Kennedy and O'Brien and the personnel, maybe just a lack of protection might be more.
Yeah, I mean, just sit back a little bit deeper. Now, Joe O'Dwyer went off with a shoulder problem. He played wing back. Mm. He might be a doubt as well, and it'll be interesting to see who Tip play because of that. But, you know, you need to set up the team to sit a little bit deeper and protect.
Right.
Because as well, if you sit deeper with 12 of your team and leave the inside forwards above, or even
to run into.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not a defensive ploy, it's actually open up space for the attackers.
Divine, by the way, using a synthetic hurl, actually.
Yeah.
We must do a piece. Have you played with one of the synthetic hurls?
Not the one he played with, but I have in the past, and you get a great strike out of it.
He's it seemed to be almost better.
Yeah, well, I suppose some people, like, the touch is more forgiving, I think, with Ash. I mean, you touch it, it's an instant touch, it feels lovely.
Right.
The synthetic ones, they're okay, but the ball tends to bounce off a little bit harder. I find the touch isn't as instant.
Right. Have you used a synthetic one, Jamesy? Which we all may have to, I don't. Everybody may have to if Ash keeps going at its current rate.
Yeah, I mean, I know some goalies, even, say, down club schools level, the cool tech will give you an extra 10 yards, I think, on the puck out in that. But I'd imagine it's easy exception rather than the norm.
Mm. So there's not too much to say about the Austin Gleeson, the goal that wasn't, except that the umpire didn't go out to make the mistake. It was a really, really bad mistake. I mean, if anyone wants to step up and hammer the man, they can. I don't really know what we're meant to say. He didn't intend to. It happens.
Yeah, what's the point? I mean, the biggest issue here is that Waterford, in the last 20 minutes, having been miles ahead, they lost the last 20 minutes 2-8 to 3 points.
Mm.
So that's the bigger issue here, that I'm a Tipperary man. And
They didn't score from the 53rd to, I think, the 66th.
Yeah.
That part of the game, they didn't score.
And I mean, I'm a Tipperary man, and I'm saying 100% that wasn't a goal. It shouldn't have been allowed. And I wouldn't massively contest Michael Cahill getting sent off. I think it's a little bit harsh, but the ref probably got it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, and maybe Austin Gleeson could have gone for a helmet pull as well. But
yeah,
the real problem here is that Watford allowed themselves to collapse because they had the game won. All they had to do was just shut up shop. And I mean, Brick made a simple handling error, but he was actually doing brilliant as the sweeper. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's misfortunate, but you should still be seeing the game out.
Yeah. James, your thoughts on why Waterford didn't see the game out? And then, and firstly, if there is an issue with the goal, the Gleeson catch, just how, who's picking these umpires? Is it the referee's friends? Do we know what training the umpires are getting? All of that area, that's long been a bone of contention for many in the GAA, that it's not as transparent maybe as to who ends up on those in those umpires' positions.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, listen, it's what's custom and practice. The referee, you know, I said this on Sunday evening, yeah, Joe afterwards, the referee has his team, and you know, they acquire probably the same experience he does because they travel with him, you know, up to the ranks, you know, clubs, county finals, inter-county, maybe minor, colleges matches. And then you get your, you know, you earn your spurs that way, and you know, you do league matches and ultimately championship matches. And listen, Alan Kelly is an experienced referee, and
so you trust, you know, in the referees to pick the right umpires effectively.
Yeah, but again, this was, you know, the Alan Kelly was let down by his umpire on Sunday evening. I mean, there's no, for me, the issue is you can't make a call like that unless you're 100% certain. Mm. And he couldn't have been 100% certain, and therefore, you know, it was just a bad decision. And you know, and as I said on Sunday evening, it has ramifications for everybody because, you know, Clare now, Clare could have been going to Turles, and effectively was a dead rubber for Tip on Sunday if they'd lost, because that's it, they're mathematically, you know, impossible even beating Clare. So, but listen, it is what it is. It's not the first time someone has, you know, to err as human. I mean, it's not the first time that someone has made a mistake, and it was a genuine mistake on his part. I mean,
yeah,
you know, and like, listen, there's probably no one feeling worse than that man all week. You know, but it is what it is, and I think a lot of credit to Padraig Mahoney and Derek McGrath and the Waterford camp in general for listen, you know, accepting it and showing a lot of grace, and you know, that was after the game, and you know, they move on. Why did Waterford not see it out? It might have been, and the reality is, Joe, like, if you're a Waterford player, did you really believe that you could take down Tip going up there, you know, given the players that they were missing, given that Kevin Moran, you know, was unavailable as well? Gleeson certainly didn't look sharp. You know, he had a couple of wides, and I don't know if he really believed, you know, that they could win, and they just couldn't buy a score. They went from, like you said, I think it was 15 minutes in the second half where if they just couldn't get their hands on or get the ball into the hands of Padraig Mahoney or one of the real shooters.
Yeah, they weren't necessarily having loads of wides. They actually weren't even just engineering much.
And they didn't. And they were pretty efficient all day. You said in the first half they were unbelievably economical with the ball.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just couldn't, you know, buy a score. And Padraig Maher and Brendan Maher in the tip half back line, I mean, you know, they started to get on top, and you know, just for Stephen O'Keefe, it was nearly like hitting the wall.
Mm.
Interestingly, Joe, I mean, you know, they conceded 12 points to Tip without the sweeper playing orthodox, you know, for 35 minutes, and you know, conceded the two goals and whatever it was, 10 odd points in the second half with the sweeper. But I mean,
and
huge credit.
It was Gleeson who went as sweeper, wasn't it, when Cal was sent?
Yeah,
off.
Gleeson went as sweeper, but funnily enough, then Watford or Tip brought on Bonner to pick up Gleeson, and Brick ended up as a sweeper. So
right.
I mean, Michael Ryan made some good decisions. Now again, it was a case of having time. He took two McGraths off, he took Bubbles off, you know, and he got more energy onto the field. And those guys that came on, particularly Bonner and Carl Barrett, turned the match.
Yeah, well, they host Clare then on Sunday, 2 o'clock. So on Saturday, Wexford Galway, it wasn't quite the event we maybe hoped for, and there was a feeling that maybe in Wexford in particular that they might rattle Galway, and it didn't happen. So Galway still look far and away the most impressive team in the country thus far. But between Cork and Limerick, Shane, we got a cracker again. I mean, drama to the end. The last 15, 20 minutes or so was just wild. Like, we can analyse tactics and moves and all of this stuff, but there was just an element of who's going to win the next ball about this game. And I kind of didn't want either side to lose. But like, this Limerick side, I think everyone's in love with.
Yeah, they've got that hardiness. They've got that never-say-die attitude.
Youth and a bit of...
Yeah, there's
oomph about them.
There's not a whole lot to dislike about them. And even though they got the red card to Aaron Gillan, you know, I never felt that they were out of the game. And kind of what really kind of makes you admire them is they lose their captain and talisman, Declan Hannan, after 6 minutes to an unknown illness or whatever it was. John Kiley wouldn't talk about it afterwards. They lose Aaron Gillan, who looks like their new sharpshooter. And even when the goal went in the second half from Patrick Horgan, they got 9 of the next 12 points. And they,
in some ways, the goal kept Cork in that game.
It did, yeah, because they were so smart. Like, they were winning the ball out the field, and again, we talk about the sweeper or the spare man is only really useful in the area that he's standing. But out in the rest of the field, from the half forwards back to the goalkeeper, they were in charge of the game. Mm. And Cork probably, you know, again, they fumbled up a 9-point lead against Tipperary. This should have been a winning position against Cork. They overdid it with the ball. And Limerick, possibly just a better team out the field.
Mm. I was reading, Sean Moran was making the point, I think a few people have, about thus far the number of games that we haven't had anyone in week three in a row winning. Now, that's tapered slightly because Kilkenny and Offaly were very much underdogs when they were in week three anyway, Kilkenny to Galway and Offaly in their game against Wexford. So they quite probably weren't going to win those even if it was week one. And then at the weekend, it's Cork and Tipperary, and they didn't necessarily lose or finish weaker as such. Like, Jamesy Cork had the very last shot of the game, so you couldn't necessarily say fatigue had destroyed them. You were at that game for Sky, and it really was brilliant. It was a thing to behold. What are your thoughts on it now, 48, 72 hours on?
Oh, it was cracking match. I mean, it was everything we hoped it would be, Joe. You know, end-to-end stuff, you know, drama, the sending off, which, you know, Aaron Galan, it was needless. It was, the referee really had no choice. Cork got the goal, and you think then that, yeah, you know, they're going to see it out from here. But, you know, the character that Limerick showed, you know, I mean, John Kiely has to be thrilled with you know, how deep the side had to dig. And you know, even from John Miner's perspective, yeah, you have to be, you know, unhappy that with the second half performance in particular. But, like, Cork came back from three down, you know, to lead it. I mean, Limerick got the equaliser, Kyle Hayes got the point, and even at the end, Harnedy had a you know, a half chance maybe to win it. So I think both managers, you know, will take the positives out of it. Lamanda had an interesting point in the Sunday game on Sunday night in terms of that, you know, Cork used Mark Coleman as a sweeper, and we'd call him Splan, you know, up, and he said that they, you know, that was the plan to Mark Coleman sweep them. But Mark Ellis has kind of played that role before, and, you know, he's more experienced, he reads the game well. You know, maybe Coleman's inexperience told, and maybe that's something that if Myler could have it back, he might take another look at. But it was just, you know, the feeling that these are two young teams, high energy teams, and it was played at a ferocious pace.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, like, we often talk about Limerick, and you know, they have to bring the physicality and the aggression, those old Limerick traits that, you know, Limerick are. When Limerick have that and that edge to them, I mean, you know, they're a team you never fancy playing against. But they marry that with just real, some real, real quality. I mean, they got some excellent scores, some really well-worked scores.
Mm. What was the one, Shane, I mentioned to you across the pitch?
Oh, that was Dermot Burns hitting it across to Tom Morrissey. Yeah. Dan Morrissey, actually.
It was real quality and bravery and composure in that. Mm.
He's just a beautiful sticks man. A point I'd make about the Mark Coleman thing, and I think it's very easy to point at a sweeper and an incident or two and say, oh yeah, he mightn't have been the right guy for the sweeper. And William Egan was definitely pointed to a couple of years ago when Tipperary hammered Cork, really, when they went for the spare man back. But like a lot of the time when the ball is coming in, you have to kind of ensure that a goal doesn't happen. And the incident that was used on the Sunday game was, I'm not 100% sure who it was. Again, it might have been Flanagan who went and got a point. But like, there was two or three guys around him. You know, I mean, he shouldn't have been getting that shot off in the first place. And Mark Coleman has to protect the square in the first place as well and get between there. So I didn't necessarily agree with that. And also last year...
Well, I think too often in analysis, if you pick out an isolated incident or two, that's not good enough. You have to show a trend. If you're making a point about someone, how they're using a sweeper or what they're doing in a game, unless it's five or six examples or seven examples and you pitch them together, then I'm sorry, I'm not buying your point. And they don't do enough of trends. It's like one example and that somehow proves the point.
Yeah, and as well on the Hurling Show we do every Friday at 12:30, little plug there. You know, that's a risk sometimes as well because we put up a screenshot and do the analysis around it and you do feel like that. But just back to Mark Coleman, like last year in the All-Ireland semi-final against Waterford, Waterford decided to put Brick wing forward on him and Mark Ellis was left as the sweeper. And I didn't, like, Cork could have won that game, of course, but Brick had a huge amount of joy on Mark Coleman because they hit high ball on him and isolated him and kind of targeted him in that manner. Mm-hmm. And he had played with the under-21s, which is, of course, a different level, earlier that year with a really weakened Cork team and gone to town as the sweeper.
Yeah.
So I think you have to look at what Limerick did to make sure he couldn't really get himself into the game.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I think that's a little bit harsh.
Yeah, there were a couple of instances, though, which were big moments in the match. You know, the first incident with Graham Mulcahy early on in the second half when you know, he blocked Coleman down and then as Coleman to pick it, he flicked it away and then hit him a belt of his shoulder. And that really set the tone, I think, for Limerick. That, listen, this is the oldest guy in the team and the smallest guy on the team. Mm. getting himself involved in a row. And I think the Limerick players, you know, I think took a lot from that, because like Mulcahy is a diminutive figure, but like he stuck his chest out. And there was another example in, you know, later on in the half where he got a great block again on Coleman, and I think a ricochet to Flanagan, and he put it over the bar. And Coleman and or Flanagan and, you know, Mulcahy in the two many Limerick full forward line, I thought were absolutely fantastic. I mean, Flanagan, the big plus for Limerick, I mean, I saw Flanagan during the league and thought Limerick have found a guy. And with Galanis as well, I know Galanis was in the panel last year, they found guys in a part of the field that they needed to find them in. And Flanagan looked like Seamus Callanan at times in Parkagee. And he will take massive confidence out of that game to play that well on that stage, under that kind of pressure. That's a big, big step forward in his career if he can build on it. And the two Morrisseys as well, I mean, you know, Dan Morrissey had to go in centre-back, you know, and did so and played with aplomb for the rest of the game. I thought he was fantastic. And Tom assumed the free-taking duties when Galan went off. Was brilliant from general play, but, you know, nailed every one of those frees, and there was pressure on some of those as well. So, like, I think for some of the Limerick players that I would have maybe, and the Morrisseys are a case in point where I've had question marks about them, but, yeah, they're good, honest players. Are they really good enough though, and elite enough maybe at this level? Have they got that maybe X factor that maybe you need? And to me, I thought those guys were absolutely fantastic on Sunday or Saturday night, and maybe answer some of those questions.
Yeah, well, they have Waterford now at the Gaelic Grounds on Sunday. I mean, that is just guaranteed going to be brilliant, and Cork have a week off. I did want to ask you both about Offaly, but the clock is against us. We'll come back to that point and we'll see how possible it is for them to maybe rebuild in the Joe McDonagh, but we'll have to leave it there for the time being. Jamesy, thanks as ever, much appreciated.
And cheers, Joe. Cheers, Shane.
Shane was in with us. And The Hurling Show with Shane Stapleton is live on Facebook, Periscope, youtube.com/offtheball, 12:30 every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reliably told that you're running late for a gym session. You should be pumping iron as we speak.
Yeah, cooler gym session. I'm going to be under awful pressure. Okay. Probably get dropped again.
Media Shane dodges Jim for appearing off the ball. So 12:30 for The Hurling Show with Shane every Friday right across the hurling season. Facebook, Periscope, youtube.com/offtheball. We have a busy football show after 9. We'll also fit in a check-in on the French Open before that.
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.